Welcome to the Agency of the Month, Department of Energy, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
When it comes to healthcare, one thing the Veterans Affairs Department has is data. Its systems house vast amounts of data on health and genomics. One thing VA does not have, though, is supercomputers. But the Energy Department has some of the biggest, baddest computers in the world. When the two departments put it together, they expect magic results. Joining me with more, Morgan Luttrell, Senior Advisor of Veterans Relations at the Energy Department. Mr. Luttrell, good to have you on.
Good to be here, sir. Thank you for having me.
So it sounds like you see an opportunity to do some deep dive into what data says that the VA can't do on its own and Energy can't do because it needs the data from VA.
Yes, sir, absolutely. The VA has the largest healthcare database system in the world. With that much information, you really can't hand it off to one particular individual. You absolutely need a supercomputing capability to process all those analytics. And that's where the merriment between the VA and DOE came together and why it's such a great cause and idea.
Give us a sense of how vast their holdings are in terms of, I guess it's terabytes, petabytes, exabytes?
It goes beyond my scope of understanding in the IT world, but yes, we're talking petabytes. And I think that was kind of the last terminology I heard when I was sitting in the room with some of the brilliant minds that get around this. The VA has what's called the MVP program. That's the Million Veteran Program. And right now they've enrolled close to 600,000 medical records. Yeah, so right now they've enrolled almost 600,000 candidates in using their medical records. And like I said before, processing all that data is just incomprehensible for a particular person. So
sure.
here is the partnership.
So they came to DOE figuring you've got internal to the government all these supercomputers.
Correct. Yes, sir. We're utilizing one of our laboratories, Oak Ridge National Laboratory is the one that's holding the enclave right now, and they're the one going to be assisting in the MVP Champion program.
And is there some kind of memorandum of understanding or an agreement that underpins all of this that you can reference?
Absolutely. You really can't get around anything in D.C. without doing an MOA or an MOU between two partners. So, yes, sir, there is one, and it's up and running and working fine.
And what is it that VA wants to discover in the data that it has?
So what we're hoping is that once we process all and de-identify and process all that data analytics, what we're wanting to see if there's a specific genetic makeup that's more susceptible to suicidal ideologies, post-traumatic stress, depth and scope of traumatic brain injury, and really refining the effort, if you will, of healthcare instead of saying, hey, for instance, if we have someone that comes in that's sick and you know how this works. You give someone medication and they say, hey, come back in 6 weeks. If the medication didn't work, we'll try something else. What we want to know in theory and what we want to find out is that, hey, look, is there actually a genetic code that is more receptive to not only pharmaceuticals but to certain treatments? And will a particular individual contract a certain disease or post-traumatic stress just because of their genetic makeup? And that's what we're hoping these data analytics are going to show us.
So that's why you need both the health data and the genomics data to be able to correlate it.
Absolutely, sir.
I guess the average medical record now at VA may not necessarily have genetic data, so that's why they're enrolling the million people to obtain that from them voluntarily.
We're actually working towards, in the military, you'd be surprised, the cutting edge, the military, the vets, or the active duty, anything that comes online, so that moves the needle forward in healthcare. So the military is actually beginning to do genetic coding, if you will, and having that implemented into the medical records. It's a slow process because it's such a big entity, but it's happening.
And so what's the first step here? I guess it's incumbent on DOE to understand the questions that VA has and then somehow translate that into code.
Well, we meet with the DOE and the VA meet weekly to discuss the efforts and the direction that we need. But you're absolutely correct. There's so many little nuances and intricacies that go into this, and we have the most brilliant minds in the VA and the DOE side that are putting this together. And the effort is there, and it's working very well. Right now, we are in the process of de-identifying the data at Oak Ridge National Laboratory because security and safety of the medical records themselves is our primary focus. We don't want anything negative. We don't shed any negative light or have anything negative happen in this process, because it's such a this will transcend and, or this will change healthcare and in the world, if you will, if our theories are correct. So we're really taking a painstaking process to make sure it's done correctly, and we're not going to rush it.
We're speaking with Morgan Luttrell. He's Senior Advisor of Veterans Relations at the Energy Department. And so how would you characterize the status at this point? There have been no calculations run yet. In other words, you're still...
No, sir. Again, we've just got this project up and running this year. So it's moving along well, considering the depth and the scope.
Sure.
But I would say within the end of this year into next year, we're really going to start to see things happening, hopefully around January 1st.
And what happens at the meetings between Energy and VA? I guess VA is trying to figure out the questions to ask in such a way that Energy can translate them into algorithms or whatever makes supercomputers do their thing.
Yeah, absolutely, yes, sir. I mean, it's just almost a mind-numbing conversation with, again, most brilliant minds that we have working in these departments.
And
there's no stone unturned or no question not asked. I can promise you that.
And I imagine that DOE has to schedule this within its supercomputing time. Do they have any sense of how much of the capacity of Oak Ridge's supercomputing this will require?
That question, a great question, sir, and that actually, it almost changes daily, just because you have to appreciate what and how much data is coming, is either going to start coming and coming through with just the genomics and then the scanning, and then if a follow-on with we have, you know, cancers and cardiac or and cardiovascular diseases, it's definitely going to grow in scale. And I don't really have a good answer for you on what that looks like long term.
All right. So, and I guess I should ask, who from VA is it that visits? I mean, you've got medical staff, you've got administrative staff. What are the types of titles and people that are involved here?
We have the director of the MVP program. We have the director of research. We have the lead primary investigator from the VA. On the DOE side, we have myself. We have people from NNSA. We have people from a vast majority of departments here getting their minds in and around what's going on. The list goes on and on.
Yes, because NNSA has to sometimes model nuclear explosions in a supercomputer, and that probably takes several hours. So they want to make sure probably everybody fits in the schedule.
I mean, don't take it just from the title, but you have to appreciate the mind inside that title and
sure.
What their capabilities are and what they've seen and their time in the building and how, and they really have a good understanding of what needs to be done to get this project up and running.
All right, so are there milestones, timelines? Where do you see this? What do you see happening over the next couple months or next couple of years?
Oh, I would say months. The conversation always, and it's me as a veteran bringing this up. Like we don't have a time to kind of stall this out. We really are pushing as hard as we can because statistically, and everyone knows this, we have 22 veterans dying each day. So we really want to make a change and save lives in this project. So to give an optimistic timeline, I always say, hey, look, we need next week. Let's not get behind ourselves. If there is a timeline that needs to be truncated, we truncate it. We're really working as hard as we can to make it happen as fast. I wish I could give you an exact time and date, but that's never a perfect world in research.
But it sounds like there's a lot of prep that has to be done before the computing can occur, and that'll be really fast because you've got supercomputers.
Well, yes, sir. But unfortunately, we have to take that data and to de-identify it. That's done by hand. And we have people from the VA and from our national laboratories working that as we speak.
That has to happen record by record.
Record by record.
Wow.
And now, you can see the process and how painstaking it is, but we're willing to do it.
Sure. And you mentioned you're a veteran and you work for the Energy Department. What's your background?
14 years in the Navy. I retired out in 2014. I was in the nonprofit world before I came to the DOE. I was brought in as an appointee at June 1st as the senior advisor for the secretary under this Veterans Relations Program. And I'll add this. People ask, well, how is there a Veterans Relations Program involved in the Department of Energy? And when I'm asked that question, my response is like, you have to appreciate what DOE is. It shouldn't be, in my opinion, called the Department of Energy. It should be called the Department of Everything. It's a think tank. And that's what we're doing, and that's what this department, Veterans Relations Department, is now in the DOE. It's a think tank, and our partnership with the VOE gives validity to that.
Sounds fantastic. We wish you luck on that one. Morgan Luttrell is Senior Advisor of Veterans Relations at the Energy Department. Thanks so much for joining me.
Great to be here, sir.
We'll post a link to the interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
For 40 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Energy's men and women solve our country's toughest energy, environmental, and nuclear challenges. In support of DOE's mission, our technical experts and scientists have delivered trusted solutions in infrastructure management, nuclear security, and IT modernization. Leidos has the experience DOE can count on, and we're ready for your next 40 years. Learn more at Leidos.com/DOE.
Support for nuclear-powered electricity has waxed and waned in the United States ever since the first reactor came online in 1957. Today, about 20% of the nation's power comes from nuclear generation. Under the Trump administration's all-of-the-above approach to energy, nuclear is getting a fresh look. Joining me with more, Ed McGinnis, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Energy at the Energy Department. Mr. McGinnis, good to have you on.
Glad to be here.
Why don't we start with just making a distinction, which I think sometimes gets overlooked in people's minds, as to what the role of the Energy Department is and where it ends, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is independent, takes over.
Well, the Department of Energy complements the very important independent role that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission does. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission actually will review licenses that are submitted by companies, whether it is companies that are designing and developing a new nuclear reactor or whether it is a utility that is applying for a license to be able to build and operate a nuclear power plant. The Department of Energy, with its 17 national labs, its strong history in the area of science and technology, extends to nuclear energy in a very important way. Much of our DNA, our history, is rooted in nuclear energy and the peaceful application. My office is the lead office in leveraging our science and technology capability to be able to support ultimately what is a private sector, energy sector-led area of nuclear energy. So we take our expertise, our science and technology, our deep history at our national labs, in many respects and in broader areas, and we work with industry to go after some of those most challenging issues that are technical in nature often, such as materials that are part of a nuclear reactor that will need to be able to operate and perform safely over the course of 40 years, over the course of perhaps even 60 years. So we play a very, very important role, and then ultimately we have the responsibility broadly to support the health and welfare of the nuclear energy sector as a complement to the broader energy sector for the United States.
And how would you rate the health of the nuclear sector at this point?
The health of the nuclear sector is good. We certainly have challenges, but part of the challenge is that we need to innovate as we have done so well in the past. We have still the largest nuclear fleet in the world, bar none. 99 nuclear power plants, they're still operated at the highest performance level of any other fleet in the world. We have over what's called a 90% capacity factor for these plants. That means we have nuclear power plants in this country running 7 days a week, 365 days of the year, rain, sleet, or snow, for 18 months or more without stopping. Full power. That is unique among all energy sectors in this country, the type of attributes that are brought by nuclear power. So I would say the utilities that are our owners and operating these nuclear power plants, we have a strong fundamental market for nuclear energy. And that, of course, we have, it's the good news. The good news is we have very inexpensive power being offered by other sources of energy, such as natural gas, which is good. But we strongly believe that nuclear power plays a long-term important baseload role, offering long-term baseload clean electricity generation to complement those other renewables and other thermal generating plants, coal, natural gas, and other areas.
Ed McGinnis is Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Energy at the Energy Department. I'm Tom Temin.
At Leidos, we know you're called to take on the world's biggest challenges. You're a scientist doing groundbreaking medical research. You're an engineer building a sustainable future. Or you're serving your country, sacrificing time with loved ones to make the world a safer place. Your work matters. We make sure you have the tools you need to get the job done. Leidos works for you, so you can continue working for the world. Visit us at Leidos.com.
We're speaking with Ed McGinnis, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Energy at the Energy Department. And earlier you mentioned research done through the labs and so forth. What are some of the top areas in nuclear reactor research that you see going on right now?
Well, we're working on some very exciting new, truly step change improvements in nuclear reactor generation for power. One area we're looking at is advanced small modular reactors. Those hold great promise and great potential. We have some of our nation's leading nuclear reactor innovators that are working hard to bring new advanced nuclear reactors to market, including these small modular reactors. At the Department of Energy, we are partnering with industry in our appropriate role to work and validate and prove out some of these technologies and materials that are going to ultimately be a part of these new systems. Some of these advanced reactors that we are focused on and partnering with industry on are looking at deployment as early as mid-2020s in the United States. Again, these could be game changers. The Secretary of Energy has made that point, and is a very good point. These new advanced American-designed small modular reactors can represent and certainly represent the potential for a true game change in the U.S. nuclear market.
What is the application of small modular? What are they and how could they be used?
Well, these small modular reactors would still provide the same type of electricity, reliable year-round power that we have with the nuclear reactors in our fleet right now. The only one of the differences, the nuclear power plants at this point in time are larger nuclear power plants. Many of them are what's called 1 gigawatt class nuclear power plants. The small modular reactors are exciting for many ways. One is they're much smaller. Some of these are units of 50 megawatts that can be brought together into 12, for example, different 50 megawatt units. And it allows utilities that have smaller capital wherewithal where they may have difficulty financing an $8 billion per unit 1 gigawatt class reactor, and rather have a 50 megawatt unit to start with, a smaller bite at the apple, which seems very reasonable, and to be able to get a smaller unit online generating electricity much sooner at much less cost, and while they're operating that unit at an earlier time than what you would be able to do for larger, you're able to sell the power, generate revenue while you're building a second scaled-up unit. So for many reasons, in addition, these small modular reactors bring significant improvements in efficiency. The designs that are being developed right now, many of them are designed to be built in-ground, and they bring very strong safety features, some of them even what we call walk-away-safe reactors. So these are very important designs.
And at the other end of the nuclear cycle is the spent materials and waste issue. And I know energy has a big role in dealing with that, which has been a big challenge for the United States. What do you see ahead in meeting that one?
We absolutely need to meet it, and we will meet it. As Secretary Perry has said, we need to stop kicking the can. We need to have a clear path forward for disposal of our nation's spent nuclear fuel. Right now, they're being safely and securely stored on site at nuclear power plants around the country, but it is absolutely very important that we move forward and that we stop kicking the can and we find a path forward sooner rather than later for our nation's spent nuclear fuel.
Would you be pushing for maybe revisiting the Yucca Mountain site, which into which so much billions have already been sunk over 20 years?
Well, that issue is now in Congress. This administration submitted its 2018 budget request that included funds to resume the application process to then go through and be further considered by the NRC. It also included robust interim storage as well. Now we're looking to Congress, and we're waiting on Congress to respond to our budget proposal.
All right. And I also wanted to ask you if you could maybe summarize the differences in nuclear policy at the Energy Department now versus the prior administration.
Well, I will tell you right now, this administration strongly supports nuclear energy for many reasons, including its very important contribution to high-paying, well-skilled jobs. The nuclear industry in this country generates almost 500,000 well-skilled, well-paying jobs. It is also an anchor. These nuclear reactors at many sites around the country, in fact, we have 62 sites in 31 countries around the U.S., these are anchors to communities. They provide very important roles. Nuclear energy in the from the administration's perspective, also plays a very important energy security role, a very important role for our energy independence, and more broadly, strategically. So I can assure you, after 26 years in the federal government, I have never seen a time where the administration is more strongly supportive of the role of nuclear energy as a clean baseload source of energy to complement the other sources of electricity in our nation.
Ed McGinnis is Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Energy at the Energy Department. Thanks so much for joining me.
It is my pleasure.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency of the Month, Department of Energy, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.